Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down the system. Pay up the exit rules. Wake up the silence.
Welcome to episode number 14 of the Star Chamber Show, and got a great show for you tonight and some good news for you. First of all, the show is, of course, brought to you by Seven Star Press, Imaginarium, and Tomorrow Comes Media, so we always give a little bit of news on those fronts. But I am happy to say that we've got all kinds of cool blog tours going on with Tomorrow Comes Media, and we had just wrapped two up with Jackie Gamber and Eric Garrison, and we got two this week going on with none other than Stephen Shrewsbury, who a lot of people say is a reincarnation of Robert E. Howard, and the great Violet Patterson, who was a great guest on our show, and she's got her Storm Sullivan Saga blog tour going. And, well, with Imaginarium, lots of stuff cooking. We have had a couple new sponsors come aboard, Hecate Press and First Page, Last Page both came aboard last week, and so we got some new members of our sponsorship family. And then this is something that I know everybody on our co-hosting staff will like to hear, and unfortunately tonight, Alex is not with us. He is feeling under the weather with the schizophrenic weather that's kind of vacillating between 80 degrees and 20 degrees, and so half of us are getting sick down here in the southern region, but poor Alex is down for the count tonight. But he would like this news, too. But we actually have our first metal show, and I'm thinking of calling it the Mulvihill Metal Madness Show in honor of Jennifer Mulvihill, because we always joked about doing a full-on metal show at Imaginarium, and we've got two bands to announce, and one you already have been hearing, and that is our bumper band, or our lead music band, Zero King, is confirmed to be playing at Imaginarium, and co-headlining with them is Automaton, and we are really pumped about these guys. And tonight you're hearing this for the first time, and about the show, and Automaton is a steampunk power metal band. I know that sounds weird, but I've heard these guys. They're fantastic. They got good powerful melodic vocals, great great heavy grooves, and their CD actually is a concept album. It follows a steampunk story, and they actually do the steampunk style costuming and everything. So it's like a fusion of steampunk and metal. It's the best way to describe it, but it's going to be really, really cool. And so we're really pumped about having that. Of course, seeing the show tonight, that time will be our toast mistress, who is actually our first ever toast mistress, and she is our guest tonight. And I have nothing but the highest respect for tonight's guest. She's just been, a great encouragement, support to all of us, and especially was very encouraging in the starting of Imaginarium. And I'm looking forward to seeing her in 2 weeks when she's going to be actually the toast mistress at MidSouthCon. She is. What doesn't she do? I mean, when they say she's a force of nature, they're not kidding. But she is a writer, she's an editor, she's a publisher, she's an activist. I mean, she just does it. It would take me about a whole hour to go through all of her accomplishments and achievements. So I think the best thing to do is, I think she is with us right now. I just want to welcome her onto the show and turn her loose with all of our co-hosts. Welcome, Lee Martindale. You are on the air.
Good evening, all. How is everybody tonight?
Hello.
Yay.
Okay. How's the hell am I coming in? Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you. I can hear you.
Outstanding. You all sound in fine form.
We're doing our best. This weather is truly schizophrenic.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit congested tonight. So I apologize. I'm a little bit stuffy, but yeah, we're doing good. Doing good.
Well, that's good. We had a 70-degree change in temperature, so I know what you mean about schizophrenic, and I'm probably as stopped up as you are. We're going to sound like a hospital ward, but that's okay.
Well, we'll still have
a
great show.
It's a fun hospital ward. Oh, yeah, I was going to say some kind of ward anyway.
No comment. So where do we start this madness?
Oh, my gosh.
Well,
you have, like you've done everything. So, I mean, you had mentioned before that you have a couple of projects coming out this spring. Do you want to lead with that and talk a little bit about things you have coming out pretty soon?
We can start with that, sure. And sorry about that. As you all know, I have been a short story slinger now for, 22, 23 years. My career is old enough to drink. In that time, I have been writing and selling short stories to people like Marion Zimmer Bradley, Sharon Lee and Steve Miller, Esther Friesner, Janet Dieter Pack, and Marty Greenberg, may God rest his soul. And seeing as how I turned the big 6-5 this summer, just don't tell anybody, I decided it was time to pull together all of the work for which I had that can be reprinted. That's excluding the shared world stuff like The Dark Over and Selena Rosen's Mother of the Apocalypse series. Yes, I'm not kidding. That's the title. And put out a collection of just my stuff. It's going to be called Harpoven Tales. And with luck and a tailwind, it will debut at ACON in Dallas in June. So that's what I've got going right now.
Awesome. Oh, my gosh.
Of course, I'm writing other short stories even as we speak. I'm probably going to have some new stuff in the collection, but mostly it'll be pulling together the other stuff.
Mm-hmm. So with shorts then, I've dabbled with that, but I've kind of had to put that aside for some of my longer books. Do you just write shorts constantly then, just as they occur to you, or do you write for calls, or how? What's your process for your short stories?
Oh, okay. My process is I am a short story slinger. I think in 5,000 words or less. Now, I have a hunch that comes from the oral storytelling tradition that I grew up in, which means you go in, you tell the story, you get out before they start throwing things. I've been trying over the years to work on novels, but I seem to work better. My natural length is a short story. Sometimes, most of the time, I will write whatever appeals to me and then go looking for a market. Either there's a story I want to tell or a point I want to make in a story, or I just gotten this nifty idea that needs to be written. Then I go through and I look for some place to sell it. Once in a while, I will go through the market listings. I use Raylan.com as my primary one and see who's reading for what and see if any ideas come to the fore. Once in a very great while, I will get an invitation. The Catopolis anthology I was in was a case of the editor coming to me and saying, I'm putting together an anthology. Would you like to submit a story? And it sounded like a good idea, so I did it. It really depends on what's going on at any given time as to what starts a story.
That's really cool. I've definitely experienced that myself. That really depends on what you want to do and what's speaking to you, but that's great. I'm really as I've gotten away from that kind of art form a little bit, I really admire people who can just do that constantly, because for me, just I love short stories and I love reading them. It's my favorite stuff to read, but it's kind of exhausting to always like be dividing myself up between 1,000 little vignette ideas.
I understand. I usually have anywhere from 5 to 6 stories in various states of done. That way, if one of them is kind of slowing down, getting sand in the gears, I'll swap over to something else for a while, and well, the other one's back burnering. It's
right.
Kind of an odd process, but it works for me.
Oh. Hey,
yeah,
if it works, it works.
That's a problem that I find myself having is if I work on multiple projects at once, it's like I've got one that is like, the one I'm working on, I can't think of anything, and then the other one is at the back of my head going, hey, how about this? How about this? I'm like, going, okay, wait your turn.
and I have to say that sometimes too, because, well, case in point, I'm working on something now that is supposed to be finished, oh, Saturday or so. And so I may be pulling an all-nighter after this, but most of the time, unless I'm working to a deadline, I've got a little bit of leeway in that regard.
Very cool. Very cool. And in addition to, like I said, with as far as like your schedule, you also, I mean, I just can't believe how busy you keep on the convention circuit. And so what do you got? I know Mid-South Con's coming right up here.
Mid-South Con is coming up in about, as you said, about 2 weeks. And it will be, I am the Toastmistress there. It's actually the second time I will be Toastmistress. I was TM there, oh, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago. This will be probably my 10th or 11th, if not more, Mid-South Con. Memphis fans are great, and this time I get to take my husband. They've been accusing me of him being a figment of my imagination all these years, and it worked out so that he's going to be able to go with me this trip. About half the time I solo because, well, he's got a job, you know, gainful employment and all that good stuff. Let's see. After Mid-South Con, I've got a book to put together. And then the first weekend in May, I will be in Atlanta for the AtlantaCon, a great GBLT convention that I've been a regular at for since their second year. They will also be hosting the National Galaxicon. And it is a really warm, fun environment that welcomes basically LGBT and friends. It's a really good con. After that, I have to go out to the Nebula Awards, and 2 weeks after that, they'll be in San Jose this year. And then I come back in, do a 2-day turnaround, and go back to Atlanta for TimeGate, which is a Doctor Who time travel Stargate get together of crazies, and again, excellent con. Second week in June, I will be at ACON 25, which is, most people know ACON as an anime convention, but it also has a killer writer track that I've helped grow and been involved with since it started 14 or so years ago. With a great lineup of guests and good writing panels, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And after that, I get to stay home for a little while.
Well, one thing that some of our listeners may not appreciate is that when you say about going to cons, and for normal people, cons can be exhausting, and you know, because you have to be on all the time, of course, you know, especially if you're, you know, on panels and all, but you tend to take on a pretty heavy schedule, and I just for fun, I want you to describe your schedule, for instance, at Mid-South Con, to give people an idea of what a iron lady you are.
Schedule at Mid-South Con. Well, being Toastmistress has certain duties attached to it. One of the things, of course, is opening ceremonies. You're basically the host for that. And closing ceremonies, in case there are survivors. Among the TM-specific duties is hosting the award. In Memphis, they give the Daryl Awards. These are writing awards for regional writers, of which they got a fine cadre. So I emcee the banquet, then I go immediately into emceeing the masquerade. This is on Saturday night. I'll be doing a coffee clatch. I've got, I haven't done a count on this one yet. I haven't gotten it into my phone yet. But I imagine I'm going to be doing 12 or 13 things over the weekend.
Yeah, because you described me. You were doing, and I'm not kidding when I say this, five, I think, panels in a row at one point. You're doing five back-to-back-to-back-to-back.
That'll be Sunday.
Yeah. I was like, and I know that everybody on here can definitely relate to, you know, just doing a couple panels back-to-back, but five, I mean, that's impressive.
Well, one year at In Conjunction, I was scheduled for some panels, and then Bob Freeman was scheduled for some panels. And Bob called me up and said that something had happened and he wasn't going to be able to make it. And if I could let them know that, you know, he wasn't going to be able to make it, and if I could fill in on any of them for him that I could, you know, whatnot. So I said, hey, you know, Bob Freeman can't make it. If you need me to fill in on some of his panels, I'd be happy to, you know, do, you know, one or two of his panels.
Oh, yes. I've said those words.
They scheduled me for all of his panels on top of my panels. I probably had a good 15 panels that weekend.
Oh, my God.
I've had a basket or two like that, which is, okay, let me explain to something that, Steve, I know you know this one. I have a button that says dangerous when bored.
Yes, you do.
They basically put me on panels to keep me out of trouble. If I'm on a panel, they know where I'm at. I remember one year at ACON, there was 23 hours of programming, and I was on 19 of it.
Oh, my God.
I was younger then by a few years. I did manage not to have to use sign on the last panel, but the voice was gone. But that's what you're there for. Writers do panels, not only because it's fun, but because it lets you communicate with the fans, the readers, the new writers, and it also gets your face out there. And for me, it sells books. And I like selling books. There's this thing about eating on a regular basis and sleeping indoors that I'm right fond of.
I was going to ask you, kind of along those lines, though, because I know you posted at the track in Louisville a kind of like a panelist 101 panel. What? I'm not asking you to do that whole panel, obviously, here. But what are some things that you think are key elements to a successful panel? What are things that, you know, panelists should come in keeping in mind to help make it, you know, one of those panels that people talk about and want to come up and meet you afterwards?
Okay, that is a really good question. Basically, to me, what makes a good panel is a good mix of panelists, people who all know the subject. They are not, and they're not there to do nothing but promote the work. They're there to speak on the subject, to discuss. You know, a good panelist, I call it hitting the mark. It's my old theatrical background showing. You're there on time. You watch the moderator. You contribute to the discussion. You don't go off on an ego boo thing. I was moderating one panel at a convention one year, where one of the panelists was an artist, and the panel itself was a really good concept. It was artists and writers talking about working concepts into the visual. And you could not ask this person a question that they weren't promoting their latest painting or something like that. Never did answer the question. I finally stopped going to her. You want people who will contribute. The bottom line on any panel is if the audience enjoys it. And to me, that's the goal.
Yeah, as far as, I know what you mean definitely about getting a good mix of panelists. You know, sometimes, though, you know, you go into those panels where, you know, a couple people, you know, happen to know each other well and also be stronger personalities, and you end up, you know, not hearing at all from the other three panelists because two of them, you know, just take over and run with it. So maybe, because I know you are a fantastic moderator, and that's a key thing I think in the mix with conventions is not only having a good mix of panelists but also having a key moderator group, and just in order to make sure that, you know, some of the ones that are, you know, maybe a little more laid back and stuff get engaged in the discussion. So I mean, do you find that it's fairly comfortable being a moderator, or do you, you know, have to have those days where you have to get in there?
I'm sicker than that. I actually enjoy it. I know there are people who would rather have their teeth pulled without anesthetic than be a moderator. I actually enjoy it. One of the things that a good moderator does is make sure everybody gets equal face time, gets equal chance to speak to a question or a topic. And sometimes, as you say, there are stronger personalities there. I find humor works really well in that case. It's possible to kind of go, okay, it's time to share now. And if you do it with humor, nobody's feelings get hurt. However, sometimes it is necessary to get, shall we say, a little firmer. And I have no problem doing that either. So, but a good, strong moderator who keeps all of those things in mind, I think is a valuable asset. And conventions that adamantly refuse to use moderators, usually don't go back to those.
I know from a personal thing just recently, I mean, Robbie Hilliard, he runs the literary track down at Conuga in Chattanooga, and he's a really wonderful moderator. And for instance, I was in a panel where we had Jim Butcher and Sherry Frost on the panel. And of course, you know, the audience, I mean, 98% of them are pretty much coming to see those two. And I just, you know, I thought it was just so cool that Robbie, you know, was so balanced in getting to, you know, all of us on the panel, and everybody had pretty much equal across the board time on the panel, and I just, it was just an example I thought of just excellent moderation, and that helps too when you have a panel that has a mix of what you call big selling authors and then, you know, some small press or mm-hmm. or newer authors, and in terms of, you know, because your crowd might actually be weighted heavily in favor of one of the panelists or two.
Yeah.
So that gets into it too a little bit, but
I have to say, Lee, I've been on panels with you before and with your moderating expertise, and they are some of the best I've ever sat on. I remember particularly that author-on-author interview panel we did at Fandom Fest last year, and it was just so cool because everyone, like, asking each other questions back and forth, and they were all insightful, and we actually really found out that we all wrote different things but had a lot of the same, you know, issues or passions, and to really, like, connect creatively. That was a fabulous panel.
That was one of the best panels I've ever done, actually, and I've probably, at this point, probably done close to 1,000 panels over the years. I really would like to see us do something like that at Imaginarium. Stephen, that's a hint.
Writing it down.
Yeah, I was on that panel, too, and I agree.
Two sign-ups
the
right there.
Yeah. That was a great panel.
That's right. You were there, too. I'm sorry. I forgot you were there.
Oh, you
Lord.
I was so memorable.
Well, you were supposed to be on one. No, you were supposed to be on one with me, and then you didn't show up. And then I forgot which one it was, that you weren't there. So I guess I thought that was the one you were at. But you were. You're right.
The line I usually use is, I've slept since then.
Yeah,
how was your experience
in that family? Go ahead, Michael, but it was fabulous.
It was. It was a wonderful experience.
Yeah, it was. Just, it was interesting to see. It was interesting to see with the to hear the answers, because I, going into that panel, I had no idea how that was going to work.
And he said, neither did I.
Yeah,
I've never done anything
like
that before.
I had the list of like. Yeah, I had like in my head, like I had no idea how people were going to slant it. Like if this was going to be like, you know, insightful questions or something more sarcastic. Like I was prepared to go either way, but I was really thrilled that it actually, like, I felt like something was accomplished and we were all, you know, not only understanding each other, but able to present kind of a various but united front for the people who attended. It was just excellent.
Oh, I talked to folks afterward that were sitting in the audience and just, they absolutely adored it. It was quite a crowd pleaser, for some definition of the term crowd.
I think there were at least three people there, so that defines a crowd.
Yeah, I counted five.
You know the victory sometimes when the panelists actually are outnumbered by the audience. That's a whole good thing.
Lord.
Yes,
I'm an old-fashioned girl. If one person shows up, they're going to get the panel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I'm the same way. And I have done that, actually, before. Where one person showed up and we did the whole thing. Yeah.
I have literally started meetings.
We did that for the Exploring the Horror panel at that same convention. It was like me and L. Andrew Cooper, and one person showed up, and I think one other person trickled in, but it was either one or two people, I can't remember, but, like, they were just starting to explore the horizon. That was the one you weren't at, Michael. Jeez, that was the one I was waiting for you at, and you weren't there. But it was cool because we got a chance to really talk one-on-one with them and talk about the different aspects of the genre that they knew or didn't know or were curious about. So even though we didn't pack the house, I think that was a very successful attempt as well, and it got
what
me
was
a chance
Michael?
To talk to.
His middle name is horror.
I know.
Everyone abandoned me at the table, and I had to watch the table.
Hey, lovely story.
You didn't have your executive staff with you there that day?
No, I couldn't. My executive staff has a habit of turning off their cell phone when I actually need them. They're quick to text me about all this stuff that I have no need to know about or no interest in. But when I need to get a hold of them for something, suddenly no one answers their phone.
Oh man, that's too funny. And for those of you in the audience, Michael's executive staff are his young ones, so who tend to be very helpful at conventions. So
yeah. When they want to tell me about the latest Pokemon whatever or Godzilla figure that they found, they're quick to text me or get on the phone with me, but when I need them to do something, it's oh, were you trying to get a hold of me? I have my phone off.
Oh, yes.
Well, speaking of Imaginarium mayhem, since you mentioned that briefly, you are actually going to be our first ever Toastmistress at Imaginarium, and it's going to be a different kind of event because it's all centered on creative writing is the central theme of the entire convention. So give me some thoughts from your perspective, because you and I, that's where it was born, was, you sort of talking to you that day, I just said, yeah, we're going to do it, you know, and so there the initial spark of it.
Let's tell the folks out there the true story. We were struggling mightily with challenges to overcome. And panel-wise, and I had said this about you since the first time I worked with you at my first Fandom Fest. the one where the air conditioner didn't work. Whatever was going on around us, the riding track worked. And I can honestly say that all 3 years I was there. But there is a limit to what I'll put up with and the kind of treatment I'll put up with by others than, well, okay, Stephen, you, no sweat. You have treated us professionally all the way through. But basically, I came to you to look you in the eye after I got you to get down to my level. I'm short. And said, Stephen, I would follow you to the ends of the earth, but I'm not coming back. And we talked after that. And if I put anything in your ear that prompted you to go ahead and do Imaginarium, yes. Imaginarium is going to be wonderful.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. Like, you know, like I said, there's always growing pains, and it's always like a tough to put on like these mass fandom type events. And I understand that, yeah, you got problems and things, and, you know, sometimes, yeah, you got growing pains and whatnot. But the thing that I've always wanted to have, and it's more a personal thing, is just have an event that's not too big, but, you know, something that could grow into a modest size, you know, so it's worthwhile for everybody that's coming. But something that had, you know, a full focus, you know, not on celebrity autographs or things like that of that nature. You know, there's a place for all that, and there's plenty of events to serve that. But I thought it'd be neat to have something that focused on creative writing, but with a convention environment, like having some of the bells and whistles and fun of a convention vibe, but have it, you know, be around, about the writers and writing and you know, including our brethren in the screenplay world and comics, graphic novels, and things like that. So for me, it's something that, yeah, I kind of was, you know, wanting to see for a long time, and I think that just it just seemed like a logical, you know, step to take to fill that niche. And I think that, yeah, I mean, just talking to you encouraged me to actually do it. I mean, definitely, and take that jump to, you know, have something that's centered and themed around that. And I think it's unique. I don't think it's like anything else out there.
There are similarities to different areas of the country. In my background, I do conventions all over the country. But to have that focus in an area that doesn't have it, and as far as I know, there is nothing like it in Louisville or Lexington or any of the surrounding area. Yes, it's a first year, you know, it's going to be first year. We are going to be flying by the seat of our pants to a certain extent, if it's like other first-year cons I've worked. But we all seem to have the same, I guess, mission is the right word. We all want to give the same kind of thing to the folks that are going to be coming. And that, regardless of what's going on, is going to what makes this thing fly. And besides,
we're
really good on our feet.
Well, rumor has it we do have a fabulous volunteer coordinator that Susan knows very well, so we got that covered now. Right, Susan? Is Susan still with us, or did she bow out?
I think her phone was acting up.
Oh, no. That was my segue for a shout-out to Bill Roddy, who's Susan's husband.
She just messaged me that she is listening, but her phone is acting up.
We're supposed to get Bill a T-shirt that says "He Who Must Be Obeyed" because he's going to make sure that it's, you know, well organized.
I love it.
But he's going to be heading. Yeah, we got some good people coming in to help with coordinating the front air command and control center and volunteers and everything. So we got good people coming in, and I think it's going to, you know, yeah, there's always going to be events and things that go wrong at any kind of live event. But I think for the most part, I think it's manageable, and we're not trying to bite off too much this first year. I think it's going to be about the right size, you know, and that's content-wise, it's going to be awesome.
If I can get through presenting an award at the Nebulas, after one of the wheels on my wheelchair has fallen off. We can handle just about anything.
Well, I know you. Yeah, I know with you there. Yeah, there's nothing for us to fear, of course. But
except me, perhaps. But that's only before coffee.
And I don't know if you knew this, but Sayla is actually heading up our masquerade side of things, our costume contest side of things. So,
outstanding.
So we will have that.
You have some great ideas. It's going to be a good time.
So it's going to have all the flavors of a con, but I mean the programming is just intensive. I mean we got just a mega amount of programming, and one of the things that's kind of cool is because it is kind of a different kind of event, we're able to pull in writers from other genres that you don't see at the kind of genre conventions. I mean, we've got some, you know, best-selling mystery authors and all rolling in. We got some good children's book authors and a lot of people that I think will add to the discussions on books and publishing and everything else, and bring a whole lot to the table that, you know, you may not see it like more of a fan genre-based event.
Wow.
So I think that's
if I was an aspiring writer or someone who liked books, this is the place I would want to be.
One-stop shop. I mean, it's going to be great, a great resource.
And for
new aspiring writers, it sounds like, well, we kind of get this sort of thing at ACON. We've got folks, yes, there's an anime con going on around us, 40,000 of our closest friends. It's sort of Dragon Con light to a certain extent, but there's a core group, 250 people maybe more. I'm usually busy. I don't count noses. They will come into the writer track room, and except for ducking out to get a hot dog, they are there for every single panel. They are there to learn, and I think we're going to get some of those kind of folks, and let me tell you, it makes for great programming, and it makes for happy attendees when we can give them information that they can use in the course of everything. So I'm really looking forward to Imaginarium.
Yeah, we're gonna have full app support so that, you know, people can pull up our most current schedule on their mobiles, and we also, the program is going to be awesome. I wish Susan was on. I wish she wasn't having technical problems tonight, because she's helping us put together a really nice program. I mean, it's going to be, you know, glossy pages, 8.5 by 11, full size. I mean, all the bells and whistles, full color through the entire thing. I mean, it's going to be a really nice souvenir program. And but, you know, we'll have all our updates and stuff will be very well coordinated if there's any, you know, last minute schedule changes, and the app will be up to date too. So
there won't be people being body painted in the room that we're supposed to have a panel in.
we won't mention where that happened.
Hey Michael, it's the artist book illustration, so it's okay.
That would be very interesting if, like, somebody was, like, painted as the covers of our books, like doing interpretive dance around us or something.
New contest idea.
Do I need to pull up an old film classic? It's kind of, there's a bimbo on the cover of my book. Maybe we better get off this particular kick, because people are going to start coming for the wrong reasons.
No, whenever I'm on a panel that you are moderating, I really enjoy just the depth of your knowledge on just about every topic, it seems.
Well, when you get my age, you kind of soak it up by osmosis. Just which I have been really fortunate to have as friends and colleagues some people that I really respect. when I mentioned Akon having a killer writer track this year, some a good number of those folks qualify as friends and colleagues. This year it's going to be Esther Friesner, Elizabeth Moon, John Henry, Elizabeth Ann Scarborough, Robin Wayne Bailey, and these are some of the heavy hitters in the business. And they keep coming back because they enjoy it. And I get to see them when they do because, you know, some of these folks we see maybe two and three times a year. But I have been really fortunate. I made my first professional sale to Marion Zimmer Bradley. And working with her and with Esther Friesner is how I learned to be an editor of anthologies. So I have been really lucky. The thing I did with there's an editing, an anthology edit called The Ladies of Trade Town, put out by my own house. I tried to do in that, and in the previous anthology, Such a Pretty Face, I tried to do for new writers what Marion Zimmer Bradley did for so many of us, be their first or second sale. And I'm very pleased that the folks that I picked, particularly in Trade Town, the first timers are making some serious inroads into the business. So basically, it's a pay it forward thing. You hear that phrase a lot in our business, but it's, you know, we pass on what we were taught, and hopefully it'll go up the chain like that. And that's one of the reasons why I think speculative fiction is such a vibrant genre to work in.
See, those good vibes of working with Marion Zimmer Bradley brought another Zimmer into your life later. So,
except you're a good bit taller and broader than she was.
Yeah, I get asked all the time. Trust me, if I had a dime for every time I get asked if I'm related to her, I would be very wealthy.
I used to get asked a lot if I was related to Wink Martindale. Not that I know of. Lately, with the work she's been doing in movies and TV, they're asking me if I'm related to Margot Martindale. We are built somewhat along the same lines. As far as I know, no, although I really do admire that lady. So, at any rate, I can understand why you get that.
Oh yeah, I get that quite a bit, but no such luck. that probably would have helped my development a little quicker if I was.
She was a good teacher. She was a tough teacher, but she was good.
Oh man, that's too good. But now, as far as I don't know how much you want to cover it too, but you have some passionate causes as well, and I don't know if you want to maybe mention and maybe a little bit in that regard, or if that's,
well,
you know, if you want to.
I think you did mention in the introduction. I'm an activist. I am female, and I'm also of an age. I went to college in the late '60s, so. I was around during the beginning of the women's movement, and some of the things I learned there. The other thing I am is a woman of heroic proportions, which is to say I'm a fat lady, and unapologetically so. I've always been big since I was a child. And weight discrimination is one of those things that it's one of the last day prejudices still. I've been working against that sort of thing and in favor of being healthy. It doesn't matter what size you are, which is size and self-acceptance. I've been working in those fields for probably 35 years. And again, the techniques translate. Back when I was doing that, I helped train a lot of the gay rights activists in Kentucky, where I grew up. So it's I am very much behind marriage equality and that sort of thing. I just figure human rights are human rights. They're not women's issues. They're not men's issues. It's a human rights issue in a lot of these cases. So, I've been doing that. I published a nonfiction magazine called Rum Parliament for 12 years, which was basically a gathering spot, teaching point, and news dissemination in size rights and size acceptance, which is actually how, to a certain extent, how Such a Pretty Face got started. I pitched pitched that anthology idea to Misha Merlin Publishing, and they decided to go with it. So I got to combine two things there. But it has been, and of course, for the last 22 years, I've been involved in accessibility issues, being a paraplegic and using a wheelchair. There are many places where handicap accessible is what they call it, but it's nowhere near what it should be. I basically teach me in trouble and on the street.
We'd have to mention just a little bit of that, because I know that's some causes are very, very near and dear to your heart. So I wanted to make sure I gave you a chance to talk a little bit about that. So
I appreciate
it. Before we wrap things up, because I know you got, tonight, this is kind of like your break, because you're on one heck of a deadline here. So, yeah, but, having a nice chat with friends, it's always good. Gets you clear the air a little bit and then get back to the deadline stuff.
It does.
Because I'm having one of those weeks, too. It's more in the book layout side of things, but it's a cruncher.
Oh, yeah. That'll be me in about 4 weeks if I'm lucky, if everything pulls together. Esther Friesner wrote the introduction for the collection, and I'm just so pleased and honored for that. But once I get everything lined up, then I do lay up, so yeah, right there with you.
Well, that's going to be cool, because by the time Imaginarium rolls around and, that part of the year, we'll have some of your new stuff for people to pick up and see and celebrate and get signed and all that kind of good stuff. I was looking at some tech stuff here. What were the street dates again on the new releases again? When can we look for the ebooks or print versions?
Okay, the trade paperback will be the first thing that rolls out. And that will be debuting, like I said, with a weapon of tailwind and no glitches at the printer. That one will debut around the 1st of June at ACON. It'll be available on Amazon on print or from the harpaven.net website. I've got shopping cart and that good stuff on my website. The ebook editions will follow as soon as I get them done, which usually is a couple of weeks, and they'll be available in both Nook and Kindle at their respective websites. Other than that, I've got a couple of short stories that I haven't heard yet on. I should know something within the next couple of weeks. I always post new sales and such on my website and other places like Facebook and LiveJournal. But that's what I've got going right now.
But hopefully by the time MidSouthCon rolls around, you'll have a little bit of pressure off, right? You'll be at least done on...
One of the short stories should be off my desk. The book will be lurking by the door when I come in for MidSouthCon. And that'll be the big push after MidSouthCon.
After MidSouthCon. Yeah, and we're not too far after that, because we're coming up in September, so we're not too far past June. So that'll be still have the sheen of a new release by then too. So
oh, yeah, it will still have that new book smell. Yes, absolutely.
Oh yeah. And then of course the $500 leather bound printed on parchment version that you're going to make five of, right?
Stephen, what are you drinking?
No. Oh, no, I always get a kick out of that. Michael actually had, what was it, Michael, you had? It was, oh, my God, it was crazy. That mummy anthology, how it came packaged.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was actually mummified.
What?
Mummified.
Yeah, they printed a limited number of the hardcover edition of the book, and then they wrapped it in gauze and wax and actually mummified it.
Yeah. That was
wow.
Creative. Yeah.
The smell of frankincense and myrrh, okay?
Yeah. It sits on my shelf now, and obviously I they gave us an e-book too, because obviously you're not going to open it, but...
No, I wouldn't. I'd be afraid what called out.
Yeah, exactly. I've seen too many mummy movies to know that you don't open the book.
Hey, I grew up watching the original Boris Karloff Mummy at midnight on the weekends. I know all of the tropes. And I respect them.
Well, we're going to have to add another hour to the show just now, because now that you've got started on horror films, I know Michael will be talking for the next hour at least.
Oh, gosh.
You're just going to have to bring me back?
Yeah. Yeah, we know where we'll find him a little bit. He'll be parked at our film festival. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're definitely coming back, because we got to have you back after the book comes out for sure. And,
okay.
And like an on-air virtual toast to Imaginarium before you actually, do the Toast Mistress stuff. Yeah, we'll definitely have to have you back for that. Yeah, for sure. Because I think you're gonna be going at breakneck speed from here all through into the summer. So, yeah, we'll probably have to catch up with you sometime in about the midsummer the way your schedule's rolling here.
Well, it's not quite that bad. I'm gonna have about a month between ACON and NASVIC.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we can do this. We can find time.
Oh yeah, yeah. We'll definitely be having you back, and of course, you'll have a whole lot of more stories. I can't wait because I'm actually gonna get to see you at Mid-South Con, which is awesome. I was so
pumped. Oh yeah, you'll also get to meet my husband.
Yeah. Well, see, I believed you, though. I believe that you had us. So I'm not one of the doubters. I take you seriously, on that. So, yeah. But that will be awesome. I mean, definitely, to get to – of course, he's not going to see much of you that weekend.
Don't bet on it. He's heading up Team Toastmistress, so – he'll probably see more of me than he does under normal circumstances.
Oh, gosh, I'm going to have to see if I can get some extra buttons in before then so we can crank out some Team Toastmistress buttons or something for you.
I love it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, cause that's a fun one. I mean, I Mid-South Con to me is an example of the perfect size and feel. I mean, it's not too gigantic, but it's large enough that, I mean, a lot of, it's got that kind of nice mass feel, but it's not so crazy that you can't visit with people, because that's the only thing I don't like about the supersized conventions is that you just get caught up in the throngs and you never get to talk to anybody. And, even if people want to talk to you at your table, they're getting kind of swept up in the river, current of people are, shoving against them in the aisles and stuff. So, I mean, it's that's always a tough thing. And that's what I'm looking for at Mid-South is, get to actually catch up with you a bit.
That sounds good to me. Mid-South is one of the conventions that, other than the conventions in Texas, Mid-South was the first Southern convention I did. And the first time I rolled into that one, I mean, they knew my name, they knew I was coming, I had my schedule, all that. Rolled in for the first time, and it was like I had rolled into a family reunion, which I came to find out is standard Southern convention atmosphere. But I thoroughly agree with you. It's a good size. They've got good people. They take care of, yeah, of the guests. And it is a fine atmosphere to work in. It's a good convention. I definitely commend it. And I'm so glad I'm going to get to see you.
Yeah, and this year's kind of exciting because, yeah, that ceremony for the Darrell Awards, we actually have two of our authors are finalists. Jackie Gamber was a finalist for young,
yeah,
adult novel, and then David Blaylock was a finalist for short story. So actually, we've got two of our press authors that are in the finals for the Darrell Awards. So that's going to be a neat night. You know, who knows?
It is, and it's usually a lot of fun too. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
Oh, yeah, and of course, there's always, like, so many characters like Alan Gilbreth running around. You just can't,
oh,
you,
yes,
can't fail to have fun.
So
he's something else. We got it. Yeah, he'll be there at Imaginarium. We'll get him on the show. We're getting to about three minutes probably.
If Lee wants to share her links, and if she wants to share any of her information before,
sure,
we have to sign off, we're at about 3:30.
Okay. Basically, appreciate you all having me on. I had a lot of fun. Come over and visit the website, harphaven.net, harphaven.net. Also look for me on Facebook and look for me at a convention near you. And thank you all. It's been a blast.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, loved having you, Lee. And I know everybody on here was excited for sure. I think Susan, I don't know what happened to Susan, but I know she was as well.
Next time.
She's just so excited she's speechless. You know, her phone just like spontaneously exploded from excitement.
Yeah.
I showed out phones at 700 miles. Okay.
She's right now talking so loud that only small animals can hear her.
Oh,
I wondered why my cats were looking odd.
Yeah. Well, I just feel bad for poor Alex because he was all excited, and you're going to meet him at Mid-South Con, and our other host went down for the count today. He got a little too sick today.
Oh,
but, he's listening. I know he's listening out there, so we're wishing him well and hope he gets better very, very soon. And speaking of Alex, yeah, his I will mention real quick a teaser for next week. Alex's new anthology, Southern Haunts 2, Devils in the Darkness, is about to come out in 2 weeks, and it'll be available at Mid-South Con. One of the authors in it and also in the first Southern Haunts, Miguel Vizcarra, is going to be our featured guest at next week's Star Chamber show. So get a little plug in for them for sure. It's an honor to have you as our first Toastmistress for our first convention. And speaking for myself, you've definitely been a great friend to us and to me personally. And thank you very much for definitely being a big encouragement toward the creation of this new madness.
Well, thank you all.
Thank you, and you take care, and you have a good night.
Thank you.
It was great having you on.
Good
night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Night, everybody.